Hello, I'm Renee Vaughan Sutherland, and welcome to Greater Than 11%, a weekly podcast that explores roles and opportunities within the creative industries, with the aim of contributing to increasing diversity across the board, in addition to promoting some awesome women. Episode 18, I'm joined by freelance creative and co-founder of Kraken Cider, Scarlett Montanaro. Scarlett studied advertising at the London College of Communication, and on the same day she handed in her dissertation in 2012, she flew to Singapore for an internship at BBH, where she launched successful project Social Rehab. Returning to London, she continued to intern for advertising agencies such as Anomaly, JWT, and Mother. She landed her first permanent job at Analog Folk after leading the creative team to win a significant global pitch. She went on to work for AMV BBDO, contributing to award-winning campaigns, and is currently working at Revolt, a consultancy built to start and spread revolutions with brands that want to change the world. She has also co-founded Kraken Cider with Charlotte Kramer. Kraken Cider is an online shop where people can purchase things such as a winter jacket, and the products go straight to a range of shelters or soup kitchens, who pass them on directly to the local homeless population. The name of the organisation was taken from a conversation Scarlett had with a homeless neighbour. People don't give me money because they just think I'll spend it on Kraken Cider. Scarlett has made television appearances on the BBC, ITV and London Live, and many stage appearances at Eurobest, Cannes Lions, Glug, She Says and TEDx. She was also for a number of years part of the Young Creative Council, an organisation that actively helps communication graduates bridge the gap between university and landing a job within advertising. And she's also a guest lecturer at the University of Arts on the subject of creativity for social good. Scarlett, is with great delight to welcome you to Greater Than 11%.
Thank you so much. That's a fantastic introduction.
So I wonder if we could start. In the intro, I talked about you being a freelance creative. So can you tell me what that creative role is and what it is you do?
Of course, yeah. Obviously, it's quite difficult. The word creative as an actual job title is pretty ambiguous. And I know a lot of people outside of the industry hear it and think that it's incredibly pretentious. But it's pretty simple, really. We come up with the ideas. That's a huge part of the job, is to come up with ideas for campaigns, for TV ads, for brands. And then we write them and make them sound amazing. And we come up with the art direction and make them look beautiful. And so the posters you walk past on the street at the bus stop, that would be done by me, or the TV ads you're watching on the TV screen, I would have maybe written that script and worked with the director to bring it to life.
Okay, awesome. And are you brought in, by the sounds of that, quite early in the process? So you either receive a brief or you're coming up with concepts maybe for a brand and then developing the actual copy and the concept and the kind of, like you said, the art direction, where it's heading?
Yeah, and it's very dependent on the agency. Mm-hmm. I've been fortunate enough to be able to work in lots of different agencies around London, even one in Singapore, as you mentioned. But the one that I'm at the moment, called Revolt, we're very much at the very, very early stages, more on brand strategy and purpose, figuring out why that brand exists in the world. So that really is a bit of a step change. We also then come up with activations and campaigns off the back of that purpose, but this one's very much the top line of the process, whereas I've then worked at places like AMV, BBDO, which was within their X-Lab department. So we were very much coming up with sort of executions for social media, and it was very sort of quick and dirty stuff that was going straight onto Facebook, and it was the very end of the line kind of campaign work. So it really does vary depending on the agency.
So how do you manage that in terms of, especially if you're freelance, like when you go to an agency and they ask for a creative, you could be walking into many scenarios. So you obviously have to have quite a broad but honed skill set. So how does that work going from different agencies to different jobs?
To be honest, Revolt is my first freelance gig. Although, to be fair, everything I've done so far in all my roles have been entirely different. I think creativity is creativity. You have to get used to a few days of working out a particular agency's process and where to apply your creativity, what kind of ideas they're looking for. But really, I think that only takes a couple of days at best. Mm-hmm. And when you're brand new into the agency, everyone gives you a few days honeymoon period just to let you get settled in. So yeah, as an industry, I think one of our biggest flaws is that we silo people. Oh, you're a digital creative, so therefore you can only make GIFs for Facebook now for the rest of your career.
Mm-hmm.
Or you write TV ads, so you're only going to write TV scripts and you should never have to do anything else. And I just don't see that we have to do that. It's creativity and it can be flexed. If you're mm-hmm. a genuinely talented creative, you can answer any brief that's thrown at you.
So in terms of where you are now in your career, can you give us a bit of an overview of how you kind of found your pathway?
I was one of those weirdos that kind of knew exactly what I wanted to do when I was young. So since the age of about 12, I was walking around telling people I wanted to be an account director at Saatchi & Saatchi. I had no idea what an account director yeah. was, but I knew I wanted to work in Saatchi & Saatchi
yeah.
or whatever that equivalent was going to be. But my dad had smaller sort of brand and graphic design agencies. So I'd kind of always been dragged to work with him on the weekends, on pitch weekends
yeah.
as a child. And I'd be watching him sort of creatively direct all the designers. And that was really cool to see. And I think that probably had a big impact on what I wanted to do. So all through school, I was always sort of all my options, even at GCSE level, I was pointing them towards becoming an advertising account director, yeah. which is what I thought at the time. And then, yep, same with college. And then I took advertising at London College of Communication. And then, yeah, I just knew that I wanted to be a creative. And that's mm-hmm. when I realised I didn't want to be an account director. Yeah. and then, yeah, I was always strong at writing.
Uh-huh.
So I was absolutely blown away and so excited by the fact that you could be a copywriter. I didn't know that job existed until I got to my first year at uni. And mm-hmm. that's what I was going towards. I mean, I've kind of ended up more on the art side, weirdly mm-hmm. enough, throughout my career. But it was pretty easy for me. I always knew what I wanted to do,
mm-hmm.
which I'm so grateful for, because I know so many people kind of really struggle with, you know, what am I going to do? That kind of existential thing. But I've never had to deal with that, thankfully.
And nice that you were able to get a taste of it when you were younger, like you said, on pitch weekends with your dad and seeing. Because, yeah. I mean, that's kind of really seeing it in the cold face. That's when all the kind of intensity.
And I think that's what I loved about
yeah.
it. I remember I must have been about 7 or 8, and I've got this vision of me sitting behind his big fancy desk and looking
in your
account
manager role, obviously, yeah. at that point. Yeah.
And this memory is just of him flailing his arms around and pointing at things, and it seemed like he was just pulling ideas out of thin air and sort of directing everybody, and everyone was looking at him going, yeah, yeah, that makes sense, blah, blah. And everyone was really sort of getting behind it, and I was like, I want to do what he does. I want to get everyone in the room excited by something and get them behind something and then just drop the mic and walk out.
Yeah.
Because that's what he seemed to be doing at yeah. the time. But obviously I was 8 and he was my dad, so yeah. I thought he was the hero, of course.
Yeah, superstar. Cool. So in terms of an advertising agency, going back to what you're talking about, being that kind of flexibility when you're going into different agencies, where would you say the primary role for the creative is? And who then kind of spheres around it? Who are they working with and who you kind of, on a daily basis, kind of dealing with?
Well, I think I work very closely with the strategy teams. That's kind of happened it's been a consistent thing throughout all the roles that I've had. You've got to always make sure it's on brief. They've spent weeks on briefs making sure the insight's right and the research is right. So it would be stupid for me to throw that all away. So I'm a big fan of the strategy department. So I work quite closely with them and executing their brief. And then from that, obviously, then further down the line, once it's been signed off by the client, then you start working with producers and figuring out, okay, so you've got this ridiculous idea. How on earth are we going to make this happen?
Yeah.
I mean, one idea that I had come up with that got signed off by the client was going to take 5 years to
wow.
produce. So obviously that becomes quite a big job, working
yep.
with them and making sure that you don't have to sacrifice too much of the creative, and whatever it is that you're going to make at the end of it is still true to your idea,
mm-hmm.
even if you've had to make it in half the budget or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that's really important. And then it's working with not in-house producers, but if it's a film, then you get to work with amazing directors.
Mm-hmm.
If it's content, you might be working with amazing animators or illustrators or photographers. So it's a really great, you're kind of in the epicenter of the whole creative process, and you get to sort of have multiple touch points and talk to lots of different people. And I suppose once the creative has been signed off, you kind of have to hand it over to the director or to the photographer or whoever, but then it's your job still to kind of oversee it and make sure it stays true to what you came up with.
Mm-hmm.
I feel really grateful actually, yeah. working in that kind of environment, because you get to spend ages. You can spend a whole day looking through director's reels. I mean, I get paid for that. Yeah. It's incredible.
Is there a lot of pressure with the role?
Yeah.
Yeah. And how do you manage that?
Probably not in the best way. I tend to go quite in on myself, and especially because I'm a hybrid creative, which means that I work on my own. And I did start out as a junior creative in a team. Mm-hmm. And I think that obviously halved the pressure, and you were able to externalise your thoughts, and then someone would validate those thoughts and tell you that it's not awful what you're thinking. So that, I think, really helped. And now I'm on my own. I think it's a case of trying to collaborate with people around you, mm-hmm. And chat through your ideas so you don't drive yourself mad. But I think it's always going to be scary. That's mm-hmm. part of the creative process, yeah, isn't it? Definitely. You're like, okay, so this brand wants to get 1 million hits on YouTube with the video that you're going to come up with in the next 3 days. Yeah. You're like, okay. And it's, you can't ever imagine when you're staring at that blank piece of paper that you're ever going to come up with something good enough.
Yeah.
But somehow you just have to trust in your own abilities to know that you're going to fill that blank piece of paper with something amazing. And thankfully, I've always managed it. Mm. So the more you do it, I think the less pressure there is on you, because you feel like you have that trust in yourself.
And do you think that building that trust and that confidence is about just doing it?
100%, yeah. I mean, actually, I was just chatting to a junior sort of creative strategist, I suppose, today, and I was actually talking to her about this very thing. She was a bit like, oh, there's not enough time, and I don't know if this is what I should be doing. This is more creative, and I'm more creative strategy. And I was like, you can do it. I've seen your work. You are more than capable of doing this. And I think the thing that I realised in chatting to her was it was the age thing. Mm-hmm. I've just been doing it for longer, so I can trust in my abilities a bit more, whereas, yeah, I suppose she's not got as much experience to pull on. It's kind of what makes it all worthwhile in the end, mm-hmm. as well. When you do come up with something, you land on that idea. If you hadn't stressed yourself out previously, it wouldn't feel as great when you finally cracked it. So it's kind of got its pros and cons, but I don't think I'd change it.
Cool. So you kind of talked about this before when I asked you about how the creative role fits in the agency. But what is a typical working day for you, if there's a typical working day?
Again, varies hugely from agency to agency. The one that I'm in at the moment, we're all about building brands and building revolutions with brands or for brands. So I can go in one day and I'm coming up with ideas on how to save the world's corals. And the next day I'm trying to help loneliness in the United States. And the next day I'm sort of trying to tell the world how Budweiser is made with 100% renewable energy and writing film treatments for content for them.
Yeah.
But it's all very purpose-led, but it's literally from purpose to purpose to purpose. There's so much going on.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, in that sense, it's never really typical. But in other agencies, because I've talked about Revolt, it's quite high-level work. You're not sort of in a production studio sat next to an editor like I might have been at, say, 18 Feet and Rising.
Mm-hmm.
Other agencies have been much more about, like, the production of the work. So mm-hmm. my more typical day would be director's reels, meeting directors, going to a production house, going to an editing suite,
mm-hmm.
doing a sound recording, all of that stuff. So it's completely different, and especially now I'm going freelance, it's going to be different for much shorter periods of time, and then I'll be on to the next phase. Yeah. So it's a really varied role, so I'm really lucky in that sense.
So how do you manage learning quickly about how to save coral through to how to cure loneliness or provide a support mechanism or structure for loneliness in America to promoting 100% renewable energy in beer making?
It's hard, I'm not going to lie. But I think that's the value of switching off. So I wouldn't be able to just be saving the world's corals and then jump straight into something else. I'd have to figure out a way of shutting my laptop for a couple of hours and, you know, stepping away from it and then coming back fresh, because it's a lot as well when you're learning about those problems. It can sort of be a bit of a weight on your shoulders in a way. So it's difficult, to be honest, but it's when you feel like you might be able to affect change within those problems, you've kind of got an even bigger motivation to just like put your own sort of sanity to one side for a minute and just get on with it, because you've got problems to solve and a fight to have, so you just get on with it, I suppose. But it is hard, challenging.
What would you say are the skills you need to be an effective creative?
I think you have to be a bit of a self-starter in a way. I think you can't be a creative without being able to create stuff, whether that be coming up with an idea. Say, for example, my side project that you mentioned earlier, I didn't just think of it and write it down in a deck. I actually made it. Mm-hmm. So you're going to be making all your work at the end of the day. So having the sort of self-starting attitude, I think, is incredibly important. And I think at the early stages of getting a job in the creative industries, you have to be able to make your own stuff and show that you've got this attitude and ability to creative directors before they'll even really look at your book at this point.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you mentioned your side project. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if we can talk a little bit more about Kraken Cider and how it came about and how does it function?
Yeah, of course. So Kraken Cider is a shop where you can buy essential items for homeless people. So it's like any other e-commerce store, only you're not buying for yourself, you're buying for somebody else. So once a product has been purchased on the online store or in one of our pop-up shops, then it's our job to fulfill those orders by taking them to shelters and soup kitchens in the local area. And then that's kind of our distribution hubs, really. They are the ones that give out the items to all the homeless people that they work with every week.
And so how did it come about?
It came about with a friend of mine. She is a strategist, and we went through uni together and we got into the industry together, and we kind of realised that a lot of the work was feeling slightly meaningless, and we had decided that we wanted to do something that was real and that made a difference in the world and showed what we were capable of as well, because a lot of the work as juniors wasn't really fulfilling what we knew we were able to achieve. So we had this kind of fire in our bellies, and we were sat over a coffee outside a little cafe in Berlin, and we were sat drinking these like 6 euro coffees or whatever, when a homeless man came over to our table and asked if he could have some spare change. And we kind of looked at him and then looked awkwardly away and didn't know what to say and said no, and that was kind of it. And he walked away and we just thought, God, we're horrible. Why would we do that? But it's something that's happening everywhere, that interaction, that awkward, horrible interaction where you as the person saying no feels incredibly guilty, and then the homeless person is sort of walking away feeling even further isolated from society and is completely without help. And we looked across at the tables either side of us and they're also sort of shooing this guy away. Mm. And we thought, there's something that needs to be done here to be fixed. And because Charlie is a strategist, she had to get to, why did we do that? Why did we say no? What's wrong with us? What's happening here? And we kind of figured that maybe it's because people giving their spare change don't know if that change is going to do more harm than good. And we don't really know where the money's going, so we feel uncomfortable giving it. And it turns out that that was true. We got back to London and we did some research with some homeless people, and someone on the street told us that people don't give me cash because they think I'm going to spend it on Kraken Cider. So now you can see where we got the name from. But yeah, the solution just seemed right there for me. Then obviously that you need to have a cashless way of being able to directly help homeless people. And that became an e-commerce store and a pop-up shop.
It's awesome. So I've watched your TEDx and Glug talks on YouTube. And in your Glug presentation, you talk about a lazy girl's guide to a side project. You are so not lazy. But what advice would you give to someone thinking about creating a non-profit?
Oh, I called it a lazy girl's guide because I think so many people look at what we did and think that it's incredibly impressive and they could never do it. But in that presentation, I very much tried to show the real side behind this polished veneer. And it's that we had no idea what we were doing. But my advice is obviously just do it, because it's not as difficult as it looks. Mm-hmm. But you have to care about the problem. If the problem isn't keeping you awake at night with the injustice of it all, then you are not going to get up on a Saturday morning and work a whole weekend when you've just had a horrible long week at work. You're just not going to. I think the way to do that maybe is to find a problem, A, that keeps you up at night, but B, you can stay close to, because you're going to need to keep coming back to it. So it was ready-made for me when it came to homelessness, because everywhere I walked, I was surrounded by it. So if I sort of felt like I didn't fancy doing any work today, I just had to walk down the street and think, well, that guy over there is the reason why I need to go home and do some work. So that's the major one, is to pick a problem that you care about. And then the second one I would say is to partner up, because as we've talked about, I had Charlie and she was invaluable. And I'm sure, I hope she would say the same thing about me, in terms of just keeping each other motivated. Yeah. And luckily we kind of went in cycles, like she'd be having a breakdown and I'd pull her out of it, and then I'd have a breakdown and then she'd pull me out of it. And this was only in the beginning launch stages. Yeah. Obviously it's chilled out loads now. We're able to run it in a way that is quite light touch. Mm-hmm. And we only run it during winter. So it's not like every single weekend I'm up working on Kraken Cider, because I think it would be too much. But those are the two main things, I think. Mm-hmm. I couldn't have done it without her.
So how do you manage the day job as a creative and the side project of Kraken Cider?
In the beginning, when we were launching, I did not manage it at all. I was basically just working mm-hmm. on Kraken Cider at my desk in the middle of the day. Yeah. And thankfully, I had an employee that was lenient. But that was just, as I said, that was the launch phase. Mm-hmm. Just getting it off the ground was the most difficult thing. And now, actually, we've got to a point where the website pretty much runs itself, and I just have to call up suppliers and just fulfil the orders in winter. I do that a couple of times and send them straight to shelters. So we've managed to, in the development of the idea, mm-hmm. make it fit so that we can run it alongside the day job. Like by design, we did that mm-hmm. on purpose. So I think that's one of the main things as well in some of the tips that I've written about. You can find them on the Huffington Post. is that design for simplicity. And when I say lazy girl's guide, it's more about the fact that you're not going to have any time. Mm. So you can't say, okay, so we're going to build a department store filled with every single thing a homeless person might ever need, and we're going to have our own fleet of vans and outreach workers, because you're just not. Yeah. You're going to have a website with five things, and that's how it's going to be. But I think you can still have a huge impact, yeah. even on your evenings and weekends. Yeah. So, yeah.
Cool. So is there a relationship between these two roles, the creative role, the kind of more day job, for want of a better word, and then this creative side hustle, you know, doing good in the world?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, without the skills that I got and have gathered within the advertising industry, I would never have come up with the idea or thought about it. I would never have thought that it was possible for me to even make something like this had I not been in the industry. And I think in terms of, if I've got to do a Christmas campaign for Kraken Cider, then again drawing on my skill sets, and the advertising industry and the people that work within it are the ones that have been the most incredibly supportive of me and the project and of Charlotte. So yeah, it's very much almost symbiotic, I would call it, mm-hmm. in a way, because it wouldn't have existed without me working in advertising for sure.
And if people want to know more about Kraken Cider, I mean, they can Google it, obviously, but what's the URL?
It's krakensider.com.
Oh, so straightforward.
So straightforward. You've got no excuse, people.
Yeah, check it out. I think it's an awesome project. As soon as I discovered it, you know, through mutual friend or colleague, Simon, I was just like wowed by it. I think it's so simple and so effective, and it's just, yeah, I love it.
Yeah, thank you. It's amazing. Mm. And it's... we kind of set it up hoping that we wanted to show the world how a charity could operate. And I think people are becoming more and more on board with that view. Like, it doesn't have to be what we've always accepted, which is our invisible £2 a month direct debit into a huge account that we never know where it's gone.
Yeah.
It can be much more tangible, and you can actually feel like you're directly helping the person that you're donating to. So yeah, it's been a great project. So thank you for your support and for listening to my ramblings.
So Scarlett, can you tell me how you fuel your creativity? Where do you go? What do you do?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big believer in switching off, actually, to let your brain settle before coming back to a project. And I think I've actually done a lot of research on certain areas around being able to sort of switch off and get into nature, and that, how much that has a huge impact on your creativity. Even looking at pictures of nature mm-hmm. ups your creativity. And there's all these studies now, and you're like, oh, wow, amazing. Okay, cool. So this is justified now. If I shut my laptop at lunchtime and go for a walk, yeah. I am backed up by science. Yeah, so, I mean, obviously I'm not able to get out into nature as much as I would want to, but I'm a big believer in wellness and looking after yourself and taking time off, going to the gym at lunchtime, sitting with your colleagues and having a nourishing conversation over your lunch rather than sat at your desk. I think that is all stuff that, who knows what that person over lunch is going to say, or who knows what you're going to see when you're walking along Regent's Canal. All little things, just experiencing life away from your laptop, I think is a huge, huge fuel for creativity. But obviously that doesn't mean to say that I don't go to galleries and try and see theatre, or I go to see gigs and try and read books where I can and listen to podcasts. It's all the all that usual stuff. I don't believe that that is that can go into a brain that isn't functioning properly. So you can go and see all the art galleries in the world, but if you're not being able to switch off and de-stress your brain, then you can't access that amazing piece of art that you saw 4 weeks ago that would be absolutely amazing for this brief, because your brain isn't functioning. So yeah.
Awesome. Okay, so can I ask you what's been one of your biggest challenges that you've faced in your career?
Yeah, and I touched on it actually earlier, which was finding fulfillment actually within it. So it's a big old industry-wide problem, but going out and helping homeless people on the weekend and then coming back into the industry on a Monday morning and selling crisps on Facebook, it was really, really difficult in a way, because I ended up thinking, well, why am I bothering? What is this? What is the higher purpose of this? And I got really sort of wrapped up into that for a while. Mm-hmm. But thankfully, there are agencies that are starting to focus on that and only do that and specialise in it, Revolt being one of them. Mm-hmm. And I'm lucky enough to have caught their attention through Crack Insider. Yep. And as soon as I went freelance, they were the first people I got in touch with.
That's amazing. I love that. Yeah. That's awesome.
They were like, yeah, of course, come in. We need more people. Yeah. And yeah, so that's been a huge help. Before that, I was at 18 Feet and Rising, which were a B Corp, so I worked on a lot of charity stuff for them. Mm-hmm. So that made me feel a lot better. So I think that was a bit of a struggle, but I think it's alleviated itself now just by the fact that actually how I was feeling as a consumer has translated into what we need to do as advertising agencies, which is to fulfill that need, which is to give everything a purpose and make people feel like these brands actually give a crap.
Yeah, and feel connected. I think connection is so important. So what advice would you give to someone wanting to be a creative?
Oh, that's a hard one, because there's so many things you need to know, I think. But I think the single biggest thing is that you have to work hard at creativity. I don't think you're necessarily born with it, and I think that you have to keep working at it, and I think you have to work really, really hard to get into the industry, and you have to be really prepared for that. Knock down all the doors that you can possibly find to knock on, and that can be probably quite challenging, and you can feel a bit like, what's the point, or you're feeling crap about yourself, or not that you're not good enough. But it's not that, and I think that's the biggest thing about the industry. Once you're in it, and it's so amazing, but it can be a challenge to get your foot in the door. But if you're prepared for that and you're ready for a fight, then you can 100% do it.
How do you work hard at creativity?
I think people just assuming, oh, she's creative, oh, she can just do that. It's not. I don't think it's really a thing. I think if you're a creative person and that stuff interests you at an early age, then you consume more art. You read more books. You might pick up a pencil and colour in, and you try harder at it. I don't think it's, oh, you're creative, so at the age of 18 you picked up a pencil and, oh, amazingly, she could draw.
Ta-da!
Ta-da, exactly. I don't think it's like that. And I think you can always work on it. You can always get better. You can always become more creative. If you are interested in it and you care enough to work on your creativity, then I think you can improve it hugely.
What else are you up to in the next few months?
Just going freelance. I think I'm going to be focusing on that, getting some clients together. I think that's quite a big move, really. I didn't really think of it as a big deal at the time. And now I'm starting to realise that, oh, wow, I'm actually self-employed now. And I've, in the past, had a massive tendency to just try and do a million things at once. So I'm actively sort of taking my foot off a lot of accelerators to kind of focus on doing that and doing it properly, because it means that I'm going to have to deal with things like taxes, which I know stresses me out beyond all reasonable belief. So yeah, I'm giving myself a bit of space to sort of settle into the freelance life. And then I'm sure I'll come up with my next business idea soon enough. I was kind of exploring one, but it just turns out the world's not quite ready for it.
Okay, that's interesting. Can you share it? Or are you still waiting?
No, it's fine. I really wanted to create a vegan dog food brand. And I wanted it to be just good, honest food, locally grown. I didn't want it to be in plastic.
Yeah.
And I wanted to source as many of the ingredients from the UK as I could. Turns out the product that I would want to create, I'd have to sell for about £12 a can.
It's a little pricey. People do love their dogs, though.
They love their dogs.
And vegans love vegan food.
That's true, but the last thing I would like to do is create another inaccessible vegan product.
Yeah.
That only the middle classes can afford. We wanted it to be accessible. And actually, we were naive in thinking, oh, veggies from the UK, how hard can that be? They haven't got far to travel. Turns out they can be really bloody expensive. So it was a bit of a curveball. But I think we were probably just going in being too overambitious, as I usually am at the beginning. So I think we need to start a bit smaller. Maybe a blog, maybe an Instagram about vegan dogs. Who knows?
Do you have a vegan dog?
Yeah, he's... Flexi vegan.
Okay.
Dependent upon whether we can be bothered to make his dog food at the weekend or not.
I thought it was dependent on whether he sees a chicken wing on the ground and like dives.
That's freaking.
I have so loved talking to you. I've loved to learn more about Kraken Cider and also what you do. But before you go, I'm wondering if you could tell me, is there a career job in the creative industries that you know little about, you'd like to know more about, and also anyone you'd like to recommend to come on the podcast?
The job that I always find fascinating is when you're watching a film. And, or for example, Handmaid's Tale. Mm-hmm. I remember she picked up a can of something in the supermarket and it was the most beautifully designed can. Mm-hmm. And someone, somewhere, has designed all the packaging in this fictitious supermarket. Mm-hmm. I want to know who that is.
Okay.
And I want to know what that process is and what the brief is that comes in. And I wonder how much creative freedom they have, because I can't imagine they've got such sort of overbearing clients as they perhaps we do in advertising. So that's always kind of fascinated me. And you never really hear about those people.
I don't know. I have no idea who actually physically makes them.
No, what is so much great. Work, though.
Yeah, it's loads of work. But in the next couple of weeks, actually, we've got Anna Pritchard, who's production designer on many, many films and TV series. So she will be able to name that role. So I will ask her directly when she's in.
Amazing. And in terms of recommendations, my favourite person in the advertising industry is Rosie Arnold. She's now ex-head of art at AMV. She's just incredibly inspiring and a joy to listen to. Although I personally kind of know a bit about her, I haven't worked with her, so maybe we could share that story with the world on this podcast. But I can't. The sad thing is, the sort of person I would love to hear from...
Yeah.
I don't know any of them. Like a disabled mother of four, or someone who's recently emigrated to this country, you know, or all these people that should be included and welcomed into the creative industry that you just don't see enough of. And I'd love to hear their version of events and their story of how they ended up here, because, you know, I'm born in London, raised in Essex. My dad was in the industry. Of course, I'm going to make it. So I'd love to hear someone that's a bit different.
I definitely am always on the lookout for a range of people, so I will be extra determined now.
Yeah, I wish I could give you names, but I don't know any of these people. That's the sad fact of the matter.
And it's kind of a lot of the purpose behind the podcast, not to plug the podcast myself, but it is that whole notion that actually being able to broadcast different roles that are available to inspire people to think that, oh, I could do that, or I never knew that existed, or that's something I'd love to do, and taking those steps to get to it. So hopefully we will increase diversity.
Yeah, it would be amazing. It's obviously what everyone's talking about, but little progress seems to be made, so hopefully podcasts like this one can make a huge difference.
I've so loved chatting to you. Thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you, I've loved being here.
Cool. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed, please write a review on Apple Podcasts, as that helps other people find Greater Than 11%. And also stay subscribed to keep up to date on the weekly releases. This podcast is made possible by the support of Hub, an insight-led content agency based in London. A huge thank you to the producers, Pat Murray and James Haberson, and to Mary Continenza for designing the beautiful artwork.